Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a Top of the Charts Tuesday. That's when my man Patrick, the co-host of the show, comes up with all the music-themed days of the week. That's when he plays jams that reached the top of the Billboard charts on this day in history. So we appreciate him hooking us up on a Top of the Charts Tuesday. Also, he also helps us come up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. And for those who haven't checked it out, you can go to X and check it out for yourself on the X platform at the Horn ATX. Patrick, give people the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day.
Big Fat Poll of the Day. Who will win the Big 12 this year? Big 12 Media Days are happening right now, or this today. They start today. Really the first big thing, first team meeting is at 11. So that'll be going on all today and tomorrow. So we're asking you who will win the Big 12 this year. Utah taking a pretty heavy lead. People believe Utah is going to come in and handle the Big 12, that none of these Big 12 teams are going to stand up for the conference that they've been in for years. It'll be a new addition. The Pac-12 team will come in and handle business. I mean, if Cam Rising plays at the level that we all expect him to come back and play at, then yep. They have a lead. But again, K-State's in there. Will Anderson, or I'm sorry, Avery Johnson. People are expecting big things from him.
Yeah, he last year, man, he ran on a tear. He didn't do anything against Texas. But, man, he was making a lot of defensive coordinators' life hell because they would bring him in as a running option. He and Will Howard, as a change of pace, and he was great. I mean, he was a guy like that. I was told was not supposed to go to Kansas State. He was supposed to go to some other school because he was like the highest rated recruit in Kansas, I believe in Kansas football in like the last 20 years or something like that, in the state. I mean, yeah. From the state of Kansas there. And, man, and he ended up choosing K-State. So, and that's why they were so confident letting Will Howard just leave. Will Howard's going to be starting quarterback at Ohio State potentially. And they're like, nah, we're cool with you leaving because this kid, Avery Johnson, is supposed to be the truth. If he is, yeah, K-State's going to be a problem. It's going to be interesting. All the change and turnover with the realignment happening, it's going to say a lot and potentially be an indictment on really the media, number one, but all of these power conferences. If you can have a school from or a program from the Pac-12, considered a weaker conference than the Big 12, go into the Big 12 and immediately have success. Same thing can be true for the Pac-12 schools that are now going to the Big 10. Same thing can be said for the Big 12 schools going to the SEC now. If they have immediate success, yeah, able to win the league their first year in it, well, it's possible y'all's league's been a little bit overrated. And it's possible the other leagues will be a little bit underrated. Let's be honest about that.
Yeah.
If you had Pac-12 and Big 12 teams going into these leagues first year and dominating the league, it's like, okay, well, y'all a bit overrated now, SEC and Big 10.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. That was a bit overrated.
If Cal goes in and dominates the ACC, that conference is garbage.
There you go, too. Exactly. Great point. Yeah. But that's the same thing.
They didn't necessarily bring in the teams that are really good right now that are going to necessarily.
That's true.
So I don't think that'll be as big of an impact. Of course, Texas was in the playoff last year, so they can go in and make an impact out of the Big 12. I definitely think the Pac-12 is going to be really, really interesting to see because if they go in and if a Pac-12 team wins the Big 12 and the Big 10, which is very possible,
yeah,
because Oregon can win the Big 10. Oregon's supposed to be extremely – they're spending all that money.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be one of the top teams in the country. So if we say Oregon and Oregon wins the Big 10, Utah wins the Big 12, then, I mean, it's hard to – then that conference, you first of all then have to look at the commissioner of the Pac-12 and go, how'd you screw this up so bad?
How'd you screw this – yeah, we know he screwed it up, but you're right. He screwed up even worse because – I'm with you. I think if you see those schools who made the transition – and this didn't take a long time, right? This was happening. This was announced a couple of years ago. It ended up happening within 2 years of it happening. So, there hadn't been a lot of time for evolution with these programs to adjust and get used to the new ecosystem they're going in. And you can go into the SEC, go into the Big Ten, go into the Big 12, as you mentioned, and become the apex predator of that ecosystem in the first season. And it's possible we've been overrating those conferences just a little bit, little bit, and maybe underrating the Pac-12 and maybe even the Big 12 if Oklahoma and Texas can go into the SEC. I think it's more about Oklahoma because Texas looks like they're going to have success.
But yeah, I mean,
well, if Oklahoma goes to the SEC and makes some noise, the SEC is a bit overrated because they shouldn't do that this year. Oklahoma shouldn't.
No, and that's
now
and
we
that's,
need to replace
it. And you have to say, because Texas has to also do something. But and we're expecting them to. But if Texas does what they're expected to do, they're expected to be a playoff team. They're expected to be a double-digit win team. So it doesn't necessarily bode for Big 12. That's why they left the Big 12. We were too big for it, right? But I think if Oklahoma wins as well in a year that was kind of expected to be somewhat of a down year for them, and they're able to beat a lot of these SEC teams, it would be a big advantage. I don't know if I see that happening as much. I do think there are – I do think Oregon is a team – like USC, I don't know how they're going to handle in the Big Ten because – that's a team that doesn't seem built to handle good defenses, and they don't seem to want to play defense. So I don't know what that I don't know what that's going to end up being. But Oregon is Oregon's built to beat is Oregon's built to win team win games against anybody. So
you're right about that.
So that's a that you could see two Pac-12 teams win two different conferences this year and not exist anymore. But yeah, I don't see Cal or what's it, Stanford? Cal and Stanford are the
Stanford,
two
yeah.
that went to the ACC?
Yep. And you got, was it SMU's in there now too?
I think SMU's in there too, but I think those are the two ACC Pac-12 teams went to the ACC.
No, you're right. Any of those new additions to those power conferences, if they come in and you start seeing if multiple of all, you know, multiple teams are having – you know, great years, first year in those conferences, it's possible that we've been overrating them just a little bit and underrating the other ones. All right, so go check out the topic for the Big Fat Poll today. Utah right now running away with that poll, as I can see. Right now, 63% of the fans say Utah is going to be your Big 12 winner. We shall see. Kansas State and Oklahoma State right now tied at 17%, and Colorado bringing it up the rear at 3%. All right, before we get into a conversation about U.S. Men's basketball, we're also going to talk about CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys a little bit, and I'll tell you why you should be a little weary, a little worried about the Aggies and their passing game coming up this season. We'll get into that too when we go into Raj Rant of the Day. But first, let's get updated. Let's get educated and informed on all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis and the Horn Headlines.
All right, your Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the MLB, the Astros send Ronyal Blanco to the mound tonight, beginning their series with the Florida Marlins. The Marlins are currently on a six-game home win streak, while the Astros have ridden a hot streak to within two games of the lead in the AL West. The Astros will still have to deal with two-star players Kyle Tucker and Justin Verlander being out a little longer, as new reports indicate that both players will not be able to return until after the All-Star break. And the Rangers won their fourth straight to with a 9-4 win over the Angels. John Gray weathered a three-run second inning to pick up his fourth win of the season as the Rangers came back strong with five runs in the fourth. Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford both homered in the game, with Seager extending his hit streak to 13 games. Max Scherzer gets to start tonight, with the Rangers looking to start a run for the second half of the season. And that is your Horn Headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines. Appreciate those. All right, before we talk some U.S. men's basketball here, I want to get to this Cowboy story. So CeeDee Lamb has warned folks. He was on social media answering some questions, actually, about his camp. He's got coming. He's got a camp coming up, like the 9th and the 10th, and I think another date on the 20th. So he's answering some questions. And, of course, people couldn't help themselves. They started asking him about this contract status with the Cowboys. And he said, I'm not speaking about any contract negotiations. If that's your questions, you'll get zero answers. Said it's about the kids. But he got me thinking about the Cowboys, and I started doing some more research and was – once again, blown away, surprised, almost stupefied by how what I found. The Cowboys have not only CeeDee Lamb right now on the last final year of his contract, but they have Dak Prescott, Trey Lance, and Cooper Rush. All three of their quarterbacks right now are in the last year of their contract, final year of their deal. Zeke and Rico Dowdle also in that conversation. So your 1 and 2 running backs. CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Cooks are also in that conversation. So your 1 and 2 wide receivers. And to complete it on offense, Zach Barton is also in that conversation. Oh, don't forget Mike McCarthy, your head coach and your play caller. So your head coach and play caller is in the final year of his deal. Your top three quarterbacks, Dak Prescott, Trey Lance, and Cooper Rush, final year of their deal. Top two running backs, Zeke and Rico Dowdle, final year of their deals. Top two wide receivers, CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Cooks, final year of their deals. And your top offensive lineman is in the final year of his deal. That seems intentional. That does, that's no way that is coincidence. That's no way that is a perfect storm of circumstances. No, no, because you got too many. There are too many people in your organization who have roles and responsibilities, whether it's your capologist or whether it's your GM or, you know, player personnel, depending on how you want to allocate depending on how you want to delegate, I should say, those responsibilities. It's, you know, there's somebody's going to ask, hey, this guy has 2 years left on his deal. Are we going to extend them? Are we going to let them play off last year in their deal? Are we expecting them to hit a free agency? Should we trade them? These are the conversations you have within your front office. So you've had, I'm sure of it, those conversations have been had. Hey, you know, this guy's coming up in his contract. Do we want to re-sign him? Do we want to trade them? Do we want to cut them? Do we want to let them play off the last year on their deal? Do we want to play hardball, lowball them? How is the negotiation going to go? And yet with all of these players, I mean, these are starters for you and critical, crucial pieces for you. And yet you end up in a contract year with your starting quarterback, starting running back, starting wide receiver, best guard. By the way, DeMarcus Lawrence is in last year of his deal. That makes more sense, though, just because of his age. But it seems to me this is intentional, and you are putting yourself in a position to overhaul the offense if necessary. And hopefully this is a sign that you're going to re-sign Dak, you're going to re-sign CD, but you know what the price tag is going to be. It's going to be upwards of $93 million a year just for those two players. Dak's going to get his $60 million, and CD's going to get his $32, $33 million. And you understand spending that kind of money on offense, in addition to paying Zach Martin maybe top dollar and getting a, you know, a really costly number two receiver and a costly number two running back and a costly backup quarterback, you know you're going to be spending so much just on two players, you may have to go with the cheapest possible option at a lot of positions, and you may have to get discounted talent via through the draft or, you know, late in free agency guys signing mercenary deals to fill in the gaps on offense, because two players costing you damn near $100 million in offense, that's a lot. And not a lot of teams around the NFL are going to have to deal with that type of financial burden. So the only way this would make sense is if they know they got to pay Dak and CD, and they're just going to clear out the rest of the offense with cheaper options at the number two receiver, at your running back position, maybe through the draft, at the backup running back position, at the backup quarterback position, and everybody else right now who may be more costly options, like a Trey Lance and like a, you know, like a Brandon Cooks, that those guys will be replaced with cheaper options. That's the only rationale that I can come up with, and that makes sense for why the Cowboys have put themselves in such a contract conundrum. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, I think it's some, that's, it's almost it. That's, but I think like they've put themselves in a position that, okay, well, we're going to be able to rebuild because, you know, we're looking at this and we think we're going to be competing. And 2 or 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when you start signing contracts and drafting guys and you're trying to place it around to make sure everybody's contracts align so you don't have everybody come up on the same year. And then it just, mm-hmm. you get to a point where you say, no, no, let everybody run out here because this is where we think our first window is going to close if we won 2 Super Bowls, and then we'll be able to go from there. And they didn't win the Super Bowls. So now they're questioning, okay, well, the plan was do exactly what you're saying, but that was the plan with the wins already.
Yeah.
We didn't get the wins.
You didn't get
so if we didn't get the wins, now do we move on completely? Do we say it's goodbye to Dak and then say that gives us a little bit more money to play around on our offense? But if we do that, do we keep CeeDee Lamb? But you kind of trade – everything seems like they're – It doesn't make sense, and I don't want to go over the top of what this team is doing until we get through camp. Because once we get through camp and they haven't done anything, there's no contracts, then we can start to hit the panic button and say, I don't think they know what they're doing. Or they know what they're doing and I don't agree with it. But yeah. Until then, I still have to feel they're going to sign at least one of these guys before the end of camp.
I don't see how. I'm with you. The other option to me is kind of a doomsday scenario because that letting them play out the last year in their deals would be the most irresponsible thing, almost borderline general manager malpractice, because if you're not want to keep them, okay, that's fine. You got to trade them. You got to get something in return for them. So that is the other conversation you're going to have if you're not going to sign them. But I'm with you. I think Dak, once they go to Oxnard, I think Dak gets done. CeeDee gets done. They know unless, you know, Tyreek Hill, I guess, could renegotiate his deal. He's been talking, so he could get some more money. Amari Cooper is another wide receiver that could get more. We know Ja'Marr Chase is going to get paid too. But I don't know if they're going to change what the price tag is on CD right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if that changes the CD price tag. And I don't know if Dak's price tag is going to change now because after Trevor Lawrence got his deal, $55 million a year, I mean, there's no stop. Dak's got all the leverage he needs. I mean, it's unless literally he goes out there and has a catastrophic injury that ends his season, he's going to be getting paid more than $55
million. Yeah.
Probably $60 million. So I guess there's no reason to actually rush it at this point because – The market is what the market is. You're going to pay
that
money.
Yeah, I think the reason you get it done during camp, because there is a reason to get it done. You're not rushing it, but the reason to get it done is there is a palpable unease in the locker room right now because you keep hearing reports, basically everybody wondering, what is going on with this team? Are we rebuilding next year? What is happening? Are you not going to keep anybody? Are we all, you know, is everybody looking for work next season? And I think if you re-sign Dak and CD – at least there's a belief that there will be some stability.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right about that. We're not even talking about the morale of the group, and you're right about that. It does affect that. I hope that's something that they're considering right now if you're the Dallas Cowboys. All right, so that's your Cowboys news. Let's talk about the men's national team, Team USA's roster. It was revealed like a few weeks ago. Bam Adebayo, Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Anthony Edwards, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Halliburton, Drew Holiday, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Jason Tatum. The conversation has been about who's going to start, and I even like the conversation that you had there, Patrick, about who's going to start and who's going to finish these games.
Yeah.
Who's going to be your best starting five and who's going to be the best closing five, I guess you want to say, out of this group. And what are your thoughts about this? Because there was some talk that LeBron James may not start. Then I saw, this came from the New York Times, says James coming off the bench probably won't happen. I spoke with two USA basketball sources and both cast serious doubt on the idea. James, the sources said, will likely play point forward for the Americans as a starter, moving Curry off the ball. So they're implying him, LeBron and Steph are definitely going to start. I heard Anthony Edwards. Do we have that Anthony Edwards sound? I heard Anthony Edwards saying, and I don't know if he's been told this or just the way he feels, that basically the offense is going to run through him. This is kind of what Anthony Edwards is saying from the T-Wolves. Here's Edwards.
I'm still the number one option. I mean, y'all might look at it differently. I don't look at it differently.
And how does that manifest? How do you go about it?
Yeah, I just go out there and be myself, shoot my shots, play defense, and, you know, they got to fit in to play around me. That's how I feel.
All right, so there you go. And they said they're going to adjust to him. So Anthony was like, hey, man, I'm getting mine, and
that's great. Then you don't play. Like, I get the theory, and I don't think he means it. I think he's just saying stuff. I think a lot of these guys are going to say stuff, and they're getting to practice, and they have respect for the game of basketball. They have respect for all these other guys, and they'll go play, and they'll say, okay, now I'm going to find the right pass, and I'm going to go. But to sit there and say, the rest of the league has to play around me. By the way, I wasn't in MVP voting. By the way, I wasn't in the NBA Finals. By the way, I'm not one of the best five players in the league right now. By the way, I could be in the next couple of years, but I'm not. And I'm going to go against guys that are, you know, have established themselves
Legends,
and done all that.
Goats.
And I'm going to go, you play with me. I go, cool, you're off the team. We'll go get Jaylen Brown. I don't care. Huh? We'll go. Jaylen Brown with zero practice will be better than an annoying Anthony Edwards. And so I get these guys are trying to show what they are, and they don't want to get the sound clips of being, you know, they want to have their clips of them saying whatever they're going to say. That one of the things you saw that came out that went viral a little bit between basketball circles was them running drills. And they were running just regular standard drills that everyone ran in high school and middle school. Like, these are drills that everybody runs, defensive drills, and you see everybody out there running those. This is a team that is going to play basketball because they want to go win.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's anybody. So there's a lot of narrative of it that's coming out where people are trying to, you know, Jason Tatum, no, I'm an elite, and I'm sure he wants to be a starter, but look, you didn't even win finals MVP on your own team.
That is true.
So go out there and prove it, but go prove it on the court. You save all the proving it by talking to different people and trying to go up there. And, you know, a lot of these guys, I'm sure, are getting riled up a little bit before they play you that 14-second clip of somebody saying something viral.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they kind of ask them leading questions. But there's a lot to it. If the team wants to be all me first, then they're not winning a gold medal. There's enough good players around the world now that other teams are going to go after them. They know what the weaknesses are. But if they want to play, they're insanely talented. They can go out there and do a lot. They have good defenders on the team. They have people that can play really good defense. They have good rebounders. They have everything they need to have. It's frustrating because the narrative is we're trying to break this team apart before it even starts. Every narrative from American media is, boy, how isn't it going to be great when these guys get into a fist fight at midcourt? Like, why are you not rooting for your team? It's just weird. It's a weird narrative that the media is putting out right now.
It is a weird. No, I agree with you. And it's and I guess some of the players, some of the younger guys, aren't helping the situation either. And then that LeBron story, I mean, but it seems like to me almost ceremonial. There'll be a ceremonial respect for the older guys that they'll get the nod. The KD will get the nod. LeBron will get the nod. Steph will get the nod. Hell, Embiid's an MVP. That those guys will get the nod. Hell, I don't know. Maybe it'll be Anthony Davis because he's a champion too. But the older guys, they'll start. And then it'll be up to kind of what you said about the coach, the matchups, and who's playing well about who finishes.
Yeah,
and that's probably way more important than who starts the game anyway.
Yeah, I mean, because it matters who goes out there and plays. I mean, and you can say there's different players. KD's been really good in Olympic play. But I like one of those guys that, you know, was never thought of as a great team player necessarily throughout his years was Carmelo Anthony. Anthony was a guy that, you know, got maybe didn't have the best reputation, didn't like playing for George Karl at all. That's well documented. And even on the Knicks, you know, he wasn't necessarily the hardest worker. That dude dominated Olympic play because he wanted to go out and represent. He wanted to go play against and the Olympics, show who he could be and go with the best players in the world. And, you know, we're not spread out over 30 teams now. And this is the, you know, best players in the world playing against each other. I want to go out there and show. And that dude would dominate. I think you'll see more of that. I think there's more actual camaraderie in the NBA today than there used to be when it was, dream team and that. These guys are all friends. I don't know if it's going to be as bad as people want to make it to be. It's just a weird narrative that is being spread now about Team USA everybody wants to start. Well, yeah, they should all, they're all starters. We all get that. But if you're worried about that in Team USA basketball, you're worried about the wrong things. And I find it hard to believe that when they were making the selection committee, that wasn't a thing that came up. Would you be okay coming off the bench? Would you be okay with doing this? Because if someone said, no, I got to start, you'd be like, well, go get somebody else. These other good players. Like I just said, Jaylen Brown's not on this team.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown is a really good player. You could take him and put him in and replace one of those shooting guards. So I don't think it'll be as big of an issue as what it's being made out to be. I think they're just trying to make it a story. We will see, though. They already had a one-point win over the select team. They play the Canada team in an exhibition tomorrow in Vegas. That'll be one that people will be keeping an eye on because that Canada team has a lot of good players on it. I know Zach Edey is staying out of it this year because he's trying to get ready for the NBA. He wants to try and make a run to actually, you know, be a impact player in the NBA because no one's saying he's going to be right now. There's going to be some good teams. And as we get closer to it, it's going to be a really fun Olympics to watch basketball, but it's not going to be like the Dream Team where they win every game by 90 and then go sit on the bench.
Yeah, because like you said, the international competition now is just too good.
Yeah, and there will be games like that. Like there are going to be some games where you can get away with it.
Yeah. But when they play the South Sudan, they're going to beat the hell out of the Sudan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. No, you're right about that. Their showcase schedule, you pointed out they got to play Canada. That'll be tomorrow. Then they play Australia July 15th. They play Serbia July 17th. They play the South Sudan July 20th. And they play Germany July 22nd. That's the end of their showcase games. And then you got the Olympic schedule starting up July 28th. They're going to play Serbia.
Yes.
July 28th. Yeah. Then they'll play South Sudan July 31st, Puerto Rico, and then after that, quarterfinals, semifinals, and the gold, bronze medal. Yeah, they, man, it would be such a disappointment if this dream team doesn't win gold. Anytime the dream team doesn't win gold, it'd be disappointing. It's happened, what, once? Is it one time they didn't win gold?
They won that, and then they had the redeem team the next year.
Oh, the redeem team. That's right. The redeem team. That's right. Was it Manu that was part of the team that upset him?
Spain.
Was it Manu and his?
Or no, sorry, Argentina. Argentina.
I think I want to say Manu had something to do with that, too, yes. If I'm not mistaken. All right, there you go. So some breakdown about Team USA. Probably a lot of manufactured drama for no reason, but there's a lot of talk about who's going to start. Jason Tatum, though, there's a lot of talk about if he's going to end up starting, because it really does. It picked up right where it left off from the narrative about him in the finals. Is he going to start in – with this group. But I love how you put it, though. These younger guys, I don't know, how old is Jason Tatum now? What,
26?
26? Oh, he's really young.
Yeah, he's really
young. These guys, we got another Olympics coming because now we know how that stuff works. Those guys, I think those guys will be, probably be more respectful to the vets, the GOATs who've already done it.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, we come back. We'll get into Raj Ram the day. I've been doing some research about Texas' upcoming SEC opponents, and I want to get into a conversation about who's going to be the best passing attack Texas Longhorns are going to face. This team will probably surprise you, but when you start breaking it down, they may be one of the most dangerous passing attacks Texas will face this upcoming season. We'll discuss it on the other side right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Davis coming back on the horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real!
My God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
You've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into some Texas football conversation. Now, I've been looking at some of Texas' upcoming opponents, doing some research about the upcoming opponent Texas is going to face. And I've been trying to look at some of the passing offenses because, in the SEC, you don't face offenses that are built on spread concepts as much. The Big 12 was definitely more of a spread league, and at times could be a running league, kind of cross-dressing as a passing league. So you can still run the football, but you're running it out of spread concepts, hybrid spread schemes. You get more power concepts, more power personnel groupings, just more power football in the SEC. It's a line of scrimmage league. So I was trying to look at the passing offenses that Texas will have to face and who are going to be probably the toughest passing offenses to face. Kind of narrowed it down. Oklahoma may end up having the best complement of wide receivers you're going to face, but you don't know really what you're going to get in Jackson Arnold, who's unproven, and Lars Lee. They have to replace their entire offensive line, and they got a new offensive play caller and a new offensive coordinator there. Carson Beck is going to be the best quarterback you play. There's no question about that. But then I'm not really sure about the skill positions there at Georgia and the receiving production they're bringing back overall. So I was looking at dog stats, and they had a really good analysis here about receiving production returning. So they looked at SEC total receiving production returning. And they looked at all the different stats, targets, yards, snaps, receptions, touchdowns, drops. And then they went deeper into this deep dive, not only looking at every team in the SEC, but looked at the actual individual returning receivers in the SEC. And they also looked at the pro football focus grades and minimum target share. So first, looking at total receiving, 425 targets returning, they got the Aggies at the top of their total receiving analysis here. 3,705 yards also would be the most receiving yards returning the SEC. To 486 snaps, that actually is not the most. That puts them kind of middle of the road in the SEC. The 283 receptions, that would be the most. The 24 touchdowns would be third. And the 30 drops would be first. So a lot of room for improvement because they had the most drops returning in the SEC. But most targets, most yards, most receptions, third most returning touchdowns in the SEC. When you have the cutoff, a criteria, where they have the stipulation of just 70, at least a 70 Pro Football Focus grade, and at least 25 targets, when that is the cutoff, the Aggies still have the most targets returning overall with 211, still have the most receiving yards overall returning with that being the cutoff, 1,934, still has the, have the most receiving snaps, still have the most receptions, still tied for the most touchdowns, actually, when that 70 Pro Football Focus grade and minimum of 25 targets is the cutoff, and they have the most drops with 14. So based on this breakdown, the Aggies actually are returning more receiving production than anybody else in the SEC. And you go look at overall the receivers that bring in Jabre Barber. He's from Troy, I believe. Almost had 1,000 yards receiving last year on 115 targets. Then there is Jade Walker. He had 669 receiving yards on 42 receptions last year for the Aggies. Then there's Noah Thomas, who had 36 receptions and 29 receptions, 359 yards for him. So if you look at the overall, those are their top three, but they, if you look at the overall returning receiving production, Aggies are at the top of the SEC. And then you take into account Connor Wigman. And a lot of people are high on him. He's only played in played in eight games. I think started seven games in his career. And if you just start in the 2023 season, the metrics, the advanced analytics, the algorithmic models that are predicting and really extrapolating his numbers and predicting that he could be one of the best quarterbacks in college football, they are, like I said, they're pretty bullish on Connor Wigman. And we know that Matt Miller, who had his way too early draft, he's got Connor Wigman, or at least he had in his way too early mock draft. He had Connor Wigman being drafted by the Rams, number 19 overall. So scouts are high on him. Metrics, here are the metrics on Connor Wigman if you want to start talking about, you know, how good he possibly could be. He came in as a five-star, so he's got a really high ceiling. But the 3.5 games he played before the foot injury sidelined him last year, 91.9 overall grade and a 90.9 passing grade. He had a, if you go look at his adjusted completion rate, he was at, 73.8 adjusted completion rate, which is pretty damn high. His clean pocket Pro Football Focus grade, 92.6. Early down passing grade, 91.2. His Pro Football Focus grade passing without play action, 92.4. He was 98th percentile in avoiding negative plays, 88th percentile in avoiding sacks, or sack avoidance is also up toward the top of the Power 5 quarterbacks. His under pressure PFF grade was 86.5, 97th percentile. And on third and long, third and seven or more yards to gain for a first down, he had an 87.9 PFF grade. So the metrics and the advanced analytics really like Connor Wigman and think that he's a next level prospect. And he's got some real impressive raw tools as a quarterback. But you combine that with the kind of returning production that I just went through with A&M, and you combine, if you extrapolate, now he only played last year against New Mexico, Miami, Lou Monroe, and Auburn. So going through an entire SEC schedule, that's a lot different. But I will say the Aggies, they probably have the most drastic range of outcomes in any of the predictive models that I've seen. Like, there's some people that think they can be good enough to be, you know, better than Texas next year and contend to make a college football playoff. And there's some people that think they might barely scrape by and make a bowl game. Like, I don't think there's a team out there that I have seen previewed and talked about in college football with a more drastic range of possible outcomes than Yankees. I mean, think about it. Like I said, once again, the analytic models, they like the Aggies a lot. They got them, FPI has them 14th. SP Plus has them 13th. Basically, the SP Plus and FPI say that the Aggies are going to be the fourth or the third or fourth best team you're going to play. Because Michigan and Georgia, of course, Georgia is number one in FPI. They're number one in SP Plus, best team you're going to play. Michigan is 5-12, 5 in SP Plus. They are 12 in FPI. So they got Michigan's basically the second or the third best team you're going to play. FPI has Oklahoma 8th. So the FPI has the Aggies as the fourth toughest game for you. SP Plus has the Aggies as the third toughest game for you. Either way, but especially when you talk about the environment and having to go on the road, that's going to be a tough game. So, and by the way, the Aggies are pretty much favored in every game. Now that Notre Dame game for them is a pretty much, I think, a coin toss. It's considered a push. They're not favored versus Texas, but every other game they're favored in. So they could be 7-0 when they play LSU if they beat Notre Dame early on. They got to play Florida early on too. Just throwing it out there, the Aggies, we haven't entertained the possibility, but it's possible the Aggies could be good when Texas plays. Like, it could be good. They could be an 8-win team by that time. And that would mean the Aggies are pretty damn good. And the only reason they're going to be, only reason that they would be pretty damn good, the only way they're going to be pretty damn good is if Connor Wegman stays healthy and if Connor Wegman lives up to the expectations of them saying basically this guy has first round potential as a quarterback, which I think everybody agrees he does, but living up to those expectations, meeting those expectations are very different than them extrapolating them with advanced metrics. But if you look at Pro Football Focus grade last year, only one quarterback in the SEC had a higher Pro Football Focus grade. Like I said, you got a much smaller sample size with Connor Wegman, but he was at 90. His overall grade was at 91.8. Matter of fact, I take that back. He had the highest Pro Football Focus grade. Carson Beck was at 91.6. Jackson Dart was at 91.2. Quinn Ewers at 86.8. I'm not saying Pro Football Focus is the end-all, be-all. You got to take it with a grain of salt, but like I said, the metrics really like him. His rating, 910 rating for him, for Carson Beck. Connor Wegman got a 990 rating. Like I said, the metrics like him and think he's going to be good. If he is, in fact, ends up being that good, then Aggies might be really damn good. And their passing attack could be very underrated. He might be the second best quarterback Texas faces on the schedule this year, depending on what Jackson Arnold does. And they might have the second best passing attack that Texas faces this year, depending on what Oklahoma and Jackson Arnold do and what Carson Beck in Georgia ends up looking like. All right, so there you go. A little breakdown, starting to do a little SEC research. SEC Media Day is coming up, so I'm starting to look at the schedule a little bit and do some research. Tomorrow I'll have some more SEC trends that I think favor Texas, and we'll get into that when we go behind the burnt orange curtain tomorrow. All right, coming up next, we'll get to Who Said That. That's where my man Patrick plays bits of audio, pieces of audio, sometimes from the sports world, sometimes beyond the sports world, and based on the context clues or based on the familiarity of the voice, you're supposed to identify and recall Who Said That. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a Top of the Charts Tuesday. That's when my co-host, the Idillionaire Patrick Davis, plays jams that reached the top of the Billboard charts on this day in history. Oh, yeah, I remember this one. It's getting hot in here. Yeah, it's a jam. back in the day. Yeah, because this made women want to randomly take their clothes off when they start dancing. I don't even know why, but it's like, kudos to Nelly. Make a song to make women want to take their clothes off, randomly dancing. I love it. It's great
stuff. Appreciate your work, Nelly.
Appreciate your work there, Nelly, no doubt. All right, appreciate your work too there, Patrick. I know you don't watch a lot of movies, but you've seen the movie Gladiator before, right?
I've seen pieces of it. I've never sat through the whole
thing. Never seen
the
whole thing. Never watched the whole thing.
No.
Gladiator. Great movie. Great movie. They're redoing it. They got a Gladiator Part 2 coming out with Denzel Washington actually playing one of the villains in it. I've been seeing the trailer on my timeline all this morning. Excited about that. Not going to lie. They are running out of ideas, though. Did Gladiator need a... Did we need a sequel to Gladiator?
No, but it's what happens when you promote people who talk big but don't think big.
Yeah, it's like we didn't need a sequel for that. It was fun. No. It was good. Stand alone. I'm sure it'll be great because Denzel's great in everything he does, but not sure we need a Gladiator 2 sequel about that one. So anyway, that's out there. Sorry, we'll get into it a little bit tomorrow and off the record. But right now, time for Who Said That. That's when my man Patrick plays pieces of audio, and based on the context clues or based on the familiarity of the voice itself, hopefully you can recall and identify who said that.
Attention, were you online on draft night when everybody was saying,
Cap, it's hard not to hear what they got to say about you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, because especially then you could just make up lies. Like, everybody going to believe you. Like, you could just press the KD want to leave button anytime you want some attention.
You mean it's a button?
Yes. It's for sure a button. What else is going to get people going around this time? Besides, the journey, man, is leaving again. That storyline going to always hit. You know, people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's why they send you the alerts on ESPN on your phone. Oh, KD's thinking about leaving. That's how big that story is, which is whack. Because I'm talking to Phoenix every day. Since the season ended, like our GMs, coaches, everybody, we've been locked in. So it's like to say, hear somebody say, well, Phoenix wants to get out of the KD sweep. So I'm like sitting there like, where is this coming from?
All right, there you go. That's Durantula. That's Kevin Durant. Where's it coming from? KD basically saying anytime you want to get some clicks, all you got to do is say, I think KD might be on the move, or KD might be traded. He's probably right about that to a certain extent.
He is. I mean, there's always, because basically I know how a lot of this stuff starts, is you have people that do shows like ours, and then you have thought experiments where you say, well, what can you do? And you look at Phoenix and you say, this roster is probably never winning a title. So what can they do to fix their team? And then as you build and extrapolate from that, it grows. And then someone hears that and they think, well, that makes sense. So clearly Phoenix thinks that, because if the rest of us agree with this, then Phoenix has to think it. And then you realize Phoenix does not think that.
It's like, hey man, we need something to talk about. So we love thought experiments, hypotheticals. And all it takes is one cool, like, hypothetical, and then it goes viral, and then, hey, and you talk about it on the big show, and then you're right, then everybody's discussing it like it's a real, actual story. And it's like, no, it was just a
experiment. we know at the midway through this season, people started already saying Wimby was going to be asking out.
Yep, I remember that.
We got halfway through a rookie season, and people were like, you know what? They should trade him already. Like, come on,
that's just jealousy, honestly. That's not even thought. That's like, just jealous, and we're hoping that he doesn't like San Antonio as much as he says he likes San Antonio.
Yeah.
But he does.
People who've never been to San Antonio be like, it can't be that nice.
It can't be that nice. It's like when you see that really smoking hot 10 with a dude who's kind of a 7, you go, well, how is that possible? That's how people see Wimby in San Antonio.
Anytime you see him, you go, he must be rich.
Yeah, he must be rich, or he must be packing. That's Wimby. All right, we come back tomorrow, same time, same channel. Thank you, Patrick, for everything you do. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We're talking about it right here on the Rodcast. We love you guys. We mean that. Take care of yourselves, but more importantly, take care of each other. Until next time, hook 'em and peace.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.